Well, we'd like to welcome you to session 172. This session is entitled Attempts to Craft a Definitive Joseph Smith Biography, a Progress Report on Scholarship Since 2000.
Well, I thought I was supposed to be there, Max.
You are. And here's Newell to finish the introduction.
I'm not that much of a, you know, I give way to my wife. That's why I managed to stay married for 34 years. But I'm not married to you.
Not yet.
These sunstones get more fun every year.
They do.
Yeah. We all got a sense of humor up here. But I guess we've got a, my watch is either slow or we ride it quarter an hour. I'm slow and I apologize. Well, we've got one more panelist that's supposed to show up, Don Bradley, and I just saw him in the hallway. So let me go ahead and get started since Maxine is a stickler on punctuality, and we got a lot of ground to cover. So let me go ahead and introduce this session. This is session 172, as Maxine was saying, Attempts to Craft a Definitive Joseph Smith Biography, a Progress Report on Scholarship since 2000. Okay, let me go ahead and introduce this session. And I don't know where Don is. I saw him in the hall. I don't know if he disappeared into some void or whatever. I mean, this is really eerie. Maybe it was an apparition. I really didn't see Don. I just wanted to see Don, kind of a metaphysical, supernatural experience, which I really, really never really had before. But anyway, there he is. Okay, Don, we're talking about you behind your back. You get yourself up here, okay? Okay. Back in the year 2000, at the MHA meeting in Denmark, in a presentation on Mormon biography, I lamented at the fact that despite general progress made in the craft of Mormon biography resulting from the New Mormon history, the definitive biography of Joseph Smith, which we all would consider the gold standard of all Mormon biographies, remained to be written. Such a definitive biography, I further stated or speculated at the time, would, in my opinion, be analytical, carefully combining frankness with empathy and sympathy. It would be written in an engaging style within a clear interpretive framework, using in a careful, comprehensive manner the myriad of historical resources, both primary and secondary, currently available. Such a biography, moreover, would use up-to-date tools of analysis and interpretation, not just those of the historian, but of various other social and behavioral sciences. Most important, it would seek to capture the essence of Smith's elusive, multifaceted personality through a careful consideration of his varied, complex motives. This panel will focus on a critical examination of three recently published high-profile biographies of Joseph Smith that have appeared since 2000. Specifically, Robert V. Remini's Joseph Smith. How many have read Remini's biography? That's pretty good. As you recall, it's a very short, weighs in 190 pages, and it appeared in 2002 as part of the prestigious Penguin Live series under the editorship of James Atlas. That's one work. The second work that we're going to consider is Dan Vogel's much longer, Joseph Smith, The Making of a Prophet, weighing in at, and I forgot the exact length. Somebody recall? 750. Thanks, Mike. Mike always remembers that stuff, and I appreciate that. Weighs in at 715 pages with, I think, some 200 to 300 pages of footnotes. I can't recall the exact number. It was published in the year 2004 by Signature Books. The third book to be considered is Richard L. Bushman's Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling, published by Alfred A. Knopf in 2005. And as we go through this, we're going to do this in kind of a roundtable fashion. We're not just going to have set presentations, but I'd like to have us consider a number of questions. I've got five or six questions here that I would like us to consider. And I won't burden you with reading the questions themselves beforehand. I'll read them as we discuss them. But I'll come back to the questions that we're going to consider. Now, just briefly, I just want to mention something about our three panelists before we turn to these questions. Now, the three panelists are as follows. Maxine Hanks, I'm going to let her go first, and she tried to go first anyway. I'm going to allow her to continue. I'm sorry, I'm giving you a bad time here, right? She'll get back at me. My wife always does. I know how women do these things. Okay. She is a writer, lecturer, and feminist theologian whose research interests are women's studies in religion, Mormon studies, and Gnosticism. I almost said agnosticism. I think kind of a Freudian slip for myself, I guess, here. But anyway, she was a visiting fellow at Harvard Divinity School and a research fellow with the Utah Humanities Council. Her first book, Women in Authority, much acclaimed and much discussed and much condemned in some quarters, reclaimed the feminist theology and history in Mormonism, and subsequent books have dealt with Mormon history. And she's taught or co-taught women's studies at University of Utah. And she is a former Mormon who served a mission for the church, and she was part of that September 6, as we all painfully recall. She became a Gnostic in 1996 and has served the Utah community as Gnostic clergy since 1999. Now, our second presenter, he hardly needs any introduction either, and gave me such a modestly brief resume here. But I'm just going to mention some additional things in addition to what he said. He's written a number of extremely seminal books. I think all of us in this room have been influenced and inspired and stimulated by his body of scholarship. And books that include Mormonism and the Magic World View, two volumes of the Mormon Hierarchy, The Origins of Power and the Extensions of Power, a path-breaking, important biography on J. Reuben Clark, and the book they did on Mormonism and same-sex dynamics, which was highly acclaimed, receiving an award from the American Historical Society as their best book of the year when it came out. Now, our third presenter, our third discussant is Don Bradley, and I got you received a BA. Where was that from? I didn't get that from you. BYU, received a BA from BYU. I forgot to write that down. And he's wants to pursue a doctorate in religious studies, which is great because there's a lot of Mormon religious studies programs that are, emerging right now, Claremont, Utah State, so on. He is a freelance writer, an editor, describes himself as an avocational historian specializing in Mormon origins. He is the author of really a fascinating article, if you haven't read this, in the most recent issue of Sunstone. I really call your attention and careful consideration. It's entitled The Grand Fundamental Principles of Mormonism, Joseph Smith's Unfinished Reformation. As I say, this was published in the April 2006 issue of Sunstone. He lives in Springville, Utah. Now, When I picked up and saw the program, it was my understanding I was just going to simply act as a moderator, and they put me down as a panelist. I'm going to try to restrict my role pretty much to a moderator because I want to leave plenty of time to consider as many of these questions as possible. I'm going to let our three panelists comment extensively. And I have said my piece about each of these three books, as Mike Quinn has, I guess in the most recent issue of, is it the Journal of Mormon History, which will contain a more full account of his comments relative to the first two books, to Remini and to Vogel. He has also written an extensive review that's going to be forthcoming on the Richard Bushman book, but he hasn't really shared the information on the latter with a public audience, and I'm excited to have him here to do that on Richard Bushman's book. And as for myself, I've said pretty much my piece in reviews of both Remini and Vogel's book published in the John Whitmer Historical Journal, which I urge everybody in here to subscribe to. And I've also said my piece in an extensive review essay that's going to appear in a dialogue on the Richard Bushman book. So, but you know, if you want to know, you know, bits and pieces of that's fine. But I'm not going to be a part of the roundtable discussion per se. Now, the first questions, the questions are as follows. The first question that we're going to consider is, what are the main strengths and contribution of each of these three books? And then I will follow that up after we talked about the strengths. Of course, we have to deal with the shortcomings and weaknesses of each. And I guess we'll go in the order that I introduced our panelists. I guess you're first, Maxine. Can we do it from the table? That would be great if we could, and then we can turn it back around for the. You'd rather do that.
Okay. So first question is strengths.
Yes.
All three of these books are fine biographies. Each biographer, in my opinion, is skilled and has produced a highly complex and a highly competent work. The strengths, just very quickly, would be. The use of frameworks, multiple frameworks. Remini, Vogel, and Bushman are all historians. They all primarily use historical method or historical research framework. And each one of them excels at this in a unique and personal way. Each one of them masters, I think, historical method, which reviews the historical sources, the data, and assembles. The information as recorded in history. So that's a given that each one of them has mastered that framework. But what I find exciting about all three of these biographies is that all three of them move beyond the historical framework of evaluating Joseph Smith and his time and place in Jacksonian America. And as I said, all three biographies do this quite well, although uniquely. But all three move beyond to use other frameworks. For approaching Joseph Smith's life, the frameworks of sociocultural, literary framework, family systems, textual, rhetorical criticism, psychology, the field of psychology is used, so that we have multiple frameworks at work in these books. There's so much that could be said about any one of these, but it's hard to know where to choose. Remini, I love Remini's Little Penguin Lives biography. It is so restful and gentle and objective in its tone. It makes me feel good as I read it. It's deceptively simple. Remini is a master historian, and he packs a tremendous amount of information and complex historical and social and cultural and literary analysis into a very few pages, and does it so articulately that I had to sit back and just in awe of his skill. I particularly appreciated his invoking of the romantics, the romanticism of the romantic writers and the transcendentalists, because I see Joseph Smith in that light. But he does an excellent job of situating Joseph in Jacksonian America, and you really see his skill as a historian with that period.
But he also delves a little bit into family systems, a little, and also into the cultural. He delves into the cultural framework and brings out cultural and literary aspects of the story. He deals with women a little bit, and I'll address the women issue later, but moving on to Vogel. Vogel's biography of Joseph is tremendously intersecting. The intersections between Joseph's life, the history, the historical framework, the textual rhetorical analysis, the psychology, the work on Joseph's psychology and the family systems is impressive. And I really have to congratulate Dan on his ability to bring all of those frameworks together very complexly and to integrate and to show the intersections very closely and tightly between the family systems, the textual analysis, the psychology, and the historical data. It's really quite a masterful weaving of those different frameworks together into one narrative. Bushman, again, historical framework, historical method is his primary focus, but he assembles a stunning amount of data, and particularly accounts, voices from both sides, positive and negative. It's just an enormous amount of historical data that he assembles. And again, he too is delving into a bit of family systems work, a bit of the psychology and the cultural framework, as well as the textual analysis. So all three of these biographies are sophisticated in that they go beyond historical method, involving other scholarly frameworks, integrating those frameworks, and showing the intersections of those frameworks. And there's so much more I can say, but I'm going to pass this down.
Thank you. I think that we have a very interesting choice in looking at these three biographies, because although they will be read by people from a diverse spectrum and for different reasons, but I think all of them are worthy of a very wide audience, I think that they are going to have a particular impact on different audiences. They're in some sense, although I don't think they were written for focus groups, in large measure, I think their greatest impact and perhaps their greatest number of readers will tend to coalesce in particular focus groups. And the publishers may have had this in mind and may have kept it secret from the authors, which sometimes publishers do keep their own agendas not always revealed to the author, and vice versa. But I do think that there are three very important contributions these books make, but they will be most appreciated by, in some senses, three different audiences. I'll look first at Remini's book. First, I want to look at the significance that I see of its appearance in the Penguin Live series and why that's going to appeal to a particular target audience. The Penguin Live series of short biographies is very limited. And at the time that this came out, I believe there were only, I forget the exact number, but I think it was something under 40. Had been done at that point. I think it was closer to about 30 that had been done. And of those in persons that were regarded as worthy of a biography, as significant for a biography, Joseph Smith, as a religious figure, is in this crowd with Martin Luther, with with Buddha, with St. Catherine, and Martin Luther King, and Gandhi. And I think that's the full list of religious leaders. St. Augustine. I forgot about St. Augustine. All right. That, I think, is the complete list. And it's an extraordinarily stellar list of religious thinkers and people who've had an enormous religious impact. And for Joseph Smith, to be in, oh, Pope John. Pope John the 22nd, or 23rd, Pope John the 23rd. For him, for Joseph Smith to be in this group is quite extraordinary, and which I think will lead to a target audience. My guess is that because of the page length of this book and the corresponding smaller price, that this will become the assigned text in religious studies survey courses for undergraduates and even graduate students to read about Joseph Smith, simply because it's cheap enough for complaining students to fit into their budgets, and teachers, professors are affected by the complaints of students. And I do think that this book will end up becoming not the primary, but I think it will be, if there's only one, if they can only select one biography, my guess is that the professor in a religious studies course or a survey course that somehow involves that kind of emphasis on Mormonism will assign only Remini and chapters from these other books. They will not require students to buy 700 and some odd page books, not only because of the reading involved, but because of the cost that students, I mean, I was complaining about it when I was an undergraduate, and things are even worse now. So I think that, for that reason, Remini is going to have a target audience primarily of college students, and that in the long run, my prediction, it could end up being not the case, is that this book will have legs. This book will last in print for decades because of that, because it speaks to a secular audience, written by a secular author, but in a very sympathetic way, and cogently, wonderfully contextual and cheap. And I think for that reason, it will become the book that all students read if they're going to read any book about early Mormonism. Dan Volkel's book, I think, also has a target audience. And whether it was intentionally the target, I think it will be like the Penguins book. It will tend to be the book that is read most by this audience. And it will be the audience that is most inclined to expect a hard-hitting, secular view of a person who claims to speak with angels who tell him to go running around the country looking in holes in the ground for golden plates that have been preserved by the power of God. And this is a very difficult pill for most Americans, certainly even a greater proportion of Europeans, to swallow. This claim of interaction with the divine, this claim to be, in fact, a divinely chosen person, is very difficult. And I believe that even more than Remini, because people who want an understanding of Joseph Smith's depths are not going to get it from Remini. He is a wonderfully written survey of Joseph Smith. He indicates that there's far more there than he can cover in 190 pages, and he'll make some readers hungry for more. Most of his readers won't want any more than what he's given them. But for readers who want more, and for my guess, it would be these courses that I was imagining for you, where he would be the assigned text, my guess is that the only chapters from the other two books that will be assigned will be from Dan Vogel's. And I expect this to be true of religious study courses everywhere where there is a significant section of the course that's devoted to Joseph Smith and a set of readings, that Remini will be the assigned text and that there will be chapters from Vogel's book, and there will not be chapters from Bushman's book. That's my guess. I could be wrong on that, and down the road we'll see, and in terms of course outlines that come out, but that's what I will expect. And I think in terms of Vogel's analysis, The chapters that will be read are the ones that I think are the most tremendous contribution of his book, and that is the chapters that deal with family dynamics, and then the 335 pages that he devotes to this textual analysis of the Book of Mormon as an expression of Joseph Smith's family dynamics. And I would expect that among the chapters indicated, they won't assign 335 pages to the students, but my guess would be it would be the central chapter of Vogel's book about family dynamics and one of those chapters that deals with the Book of Mormon as an expression of those family dynamics. And that's what I think the future reading lists are going to be. Now, I think there's going to be a different audience affected by Richard Bushman. Even though he is one of the premier authors in American history, Remini is certainly in that league as well. I mean, he's won a National Book Award for his biography of Andrew Jackson. But I think that the combination of Bushman's cachet with the Mormon community as a believing author, plus his stature as an American historian, will guarantee that it will be an inverse proportion in Utah and in religious study programs which are influenced by friendly non-Mormons and by active Mormons who will at some point be involved in these, whether it's at Claremont or at Utah State University or wherever, the program that Douglas Davies has. My guess is that Douglas Davies will not assign the Remini book, that he will assign the Richard Bushman book, and probably will not assign even a chapter from Vogel. And I think that this represents the polarization that still exists in the prophet puzzle that Jan Shipps outlined in 1974, that within the historic community of historians, there is this polarized view that dominated, and it still influences, even though Bushman tried to bridge that polarization, and Vogel tried to bridge that polarization by presenting a tremendously sympathetic view of a pious fraud. And Bushman, on his hand, tried to present it by presenting this very exasperatingly, stunningly, surprisingly, shockingly complex person who, as Bushman affirmed, was still a prophet of God. And Bushman and Vogel moved toward one another, but neither one of them successfully bridges that polarization. There is an overlap, but there cannot really, I think, be a complete bridging of that gap. But I think that their target audiences are going to be in these directions, that Mormon studies programs that are governed by Mormons are clearly going to skip Remini just because he's too short, he doesn't go into enough depth, and they're going to assign the Bushman biography, unless they choose to assign a Deseret book publication, which is a whole different kind of problem. But I mean, if they're going to choose the most important biographies that have been written about Joseph Smith in the last 5 years, that's how they're going to go. They're going to lean in that direction. And also, I think the Jan Shipps kinds of friendly non-Mormon scholars of Mormonism will assign Richard Bushman. Whereas I think those who do not feel a need to be identified as a friendly non-Mormon historian are going to assign Dan Vogel, and I think that polarization is going to continue to happen. Each one of them has an important niche to fill, and if you have the time and the energy, I would recommend that you read all three.
Like Mike and Maxine, I see each volume making its own contribution and also being tailored for or appropriate for a different audience. I would recommend the Remini volume to a friendly, or actually to any moderately interested non-Latter-day Saint who just wanted to know a basic life of Joseph Smith. Remini just gives a basic general introduction to the prophet's life. For someone who really wanted to dig in and get the much greater depth in his life, I would recommend the Bushman book. And then Vogel's biography actually covers, for those who haven't read it, covers just Joseph Smith's earlier years. It's subtitled The Making of a Prophet. It really emphasizes his early development and his development into a prophet. That Vogel's book I would recommend more for someone who wanted to understand that evolution and perhaps had more of a skeptical or critical bent. Remini, a strength of Remini is that he really, in relatively few pages, he does succeed in contextualizing Joseph Smith and his time and place in the Jacksonian era. He remains ideologically uncommitted on Joseph Smith. He says he's not going to make a judgment. Is this guy a prophet? Is he a fraud? And so he's accessible to Mormons and non-Mormons. He seems to me to have surprising insight at times into the personalities of Joseph Smith Jr. and of Lucy Mack Smith. As far as weaknesses, I see in Remini, it seemed like there were occasional just factual errors, names that he got wrong, details like that. And necessarily because of the length of the book, there's a relative lack of depth. For instance, when he's talking about the first vision, he only refers to the canonical account of the first vision rather than the full sweep of the accounts that give a more complete picture of the event. Bushman much more meticulously contextualizes Joseph Smith. He gives detailed observations placing Joseph Smith in his geographical context, his cultural context. He does tackle some issues that for Latter-day Saints would be considered tough issues regarding plural marriage, treasure digging, kinderhook plates, other issues like that. And he takes Joseph Smith and his thought and his actions very seriously and takes them as something worthy of analyzing. In terms of weaknesses of Bushman, I see, for me, there were weaknesses of method. Like Bushman in his preface tells us basically how he's going to proceed. He says, I'm a believer and I have to communicate Joseph Smith's life to an audience that includes non-believers. And he tells us that because these experiences, these religious experiences of Joseph Smith were real to Joseph Smith, he's going to report them that way to his readers. At the outset, he's assuming what I think he needs to be arguing in the body of the work, and that is Joseph Smith's sincerity. To say that a historical figure is sincere is a historical judgment, and it's one that he should be making as a historian with historical arguments rather than as an assumption that he brings in at the beginning. Bushman sometimes, or perhaps frequently, appears to be apologetic. He's very much a scholar, but I think Marvin Hill years ago titled a review of Bushman's earlier biography of Joseph Smith's, like up to 1831, I believe it was, earlier years, Richard Bushman, Scholar and Apologist. And I think Bushman has continued to be both. Bushman, while he reports Joseph Smith's treasure digging activities, he puts them out of chronological order. He puts the first Moroni visit. He puts the Moroni visits first, and then he describes the treasure digging. And we know that the treasure seeing activities began before Moroni came, and so he gets around the question, the intriguing question: why would God have chosen to give this treasure, these gold plates, to someone who was already a treasure digger? When reporting the loss of the so-called 116 pages of the Book of Mormon, the first manuscript, he says that Lucy Smith surmised, that's his phrase, that they had been taken so they could be doctored. He leaves out that Lucy Smith, of course, gets this conclusion from Doctrine and Covenants 10 that says that's what's happened to the manuscript. And so he's presenting the LDS Doctrine and Covenants version of what happened to the manuscript by way of Lucy Smith without telling where the idea really comes from. As one last instance of that, when he's talking about polygamy and he talks about sex within polygamy, he just basically assumes that he says we don't have good reason to think that there wasn't sex within Joseph Smith's plural marriages. Then when he switches to Joseph Smith's plural marriages to women who were already otherwise married, he switches the burden of proof and says we don't have definite proof that Joseph Smith did have sex with these women. As far as turning to Vogel, I see as a real strength of Vogel's biography that Vogel really tries to explain Joseph Smith. He takes seriously his responsibility as a historian to tell us about the person, what made this, not only what did he do, but why did he do it, both the outside of the events and the inside of the events within Joseph Smith. He brings, I think is an absolutely necessary perspective, whether Joseph Smith is regarded as sincere or, as he argues, as a fraud. And that is the perspective of looking at other treasure seers, rodsmen, occult workers. We know that Joseph Smith, when he was a young man, was a rodsman. We know that he used a seer stone. And so Vogel looks at divining with the rod back in Joseph Smith's time. He looks at this divining or water witching today. He cites studies that show that it's basically it doesn't work. And he looks at the motives and methods of people who use these maybe for lack of a better word, occult means of gaining knowledge. Vogel argues up front his position that Joseph Smith used deception. Unlike Bushman, he argues that Joseph Smith is sincere in a sense, but he's using deception to achieve these sincere means. And right at the outset, in the beginning of the volume, he gives his arguments for Joseph Smith using deception. Basically, they are that this isn't the way reality really works. He quotes, I think it was Thomas Paine who said something to the effect that, what's more likely, that we'll have contraventions of natural law or that a man should lie? He says that we can observe, again, the methods of other rodsmen and occult practitioners, and that their means are ineffective and that their practitioners are often deceptive, and puts Joseph Smith in that category. And he uses Jonathan Thompson's testimony of an event in the context of treasure digs that would have been unlikely unless Joseph Smith did use deception. Also, a great strength of the book that's already been mentioned is that it really fleshes out the dictation period of the Book of Mormon. It's, in a sense, it's a biography of the Book of Mormon. And as far as weaknesses, it seems to me, of course, Vogel attempts to describe the dynamics of the Smith family from a family systems perspective, but I don't really see very much appeal in the book to the literature or theory of family systems to ground that take. It seems like he's applying it more intuitively, perhaps based on what he's read. By contrast, Vogel, in his response to a review of his biography, has cited Kyle Walker, a BYU thesis or dissertation he wrote about the Joseph Smith senior family dynamics. And I've looked at Walker's book, and he attempts more to ground his analysis in this body of theory. I'm not necessarily saying his analysis is right or even that it's better, but that he makes more of an attempt to ground it in that way. Vogel frequently adds to the body of the text what appeared to me to be attempts to disprove Joseph Smith's inspiration. When a revelation of Joseph Smith has made use of a biblical passage, Vogel will often point out that based on modern critical scholarship, that use of the biblical passage was wrong. It seems to me that kind of observation should be in the endnotes where a curious reader might find it, but it's not really part of the life story of Joseph Smith. And he often, and I guess this goes back to the ambition of his volume, since he's trying to explain Joseph Smith as a whole, he often engages in speculation where he seems to go well beyond his evidence. To his credit on that, he does usually signal his speculations with words like perhaps or maybe, things like that. So, as I said, each volume, I think, really makes a genuine contribution to our understanding of Joseph Smith.
Well, the central weakness of Remini's book is the lack of the why question. Why is Joseph Smith what he is? And he deals with this by addressing the why question of the appeal. Why did Joseph Smith, quite extraordinary fast growth of the LDS Church, even in Palmyra, it grew relatively fast, even though nothing compared to what it later grew in other places. But Remini never looks at the inner Joseph Smith in the way that Bushman and Vogel try to. And I will say that I think that Vogel explores the inner Joseph Smith far more than Bushman, because Bushman, by the constraints of being a believer, even though I am a believer too, one of the weaknesses of that is that even though you will give a nod in the direction of, well, maybe this is all made up, maybe this is all fraud, even if you're willing to acknowledge that, you're not going to pursue that possibility with the same enthusiasm or certainly the same word count as you do the side of that will reinforce belief. And as a result, in one sense, you get two inner Joseph Smiths in these two different biographies, and you get a Joseph Smith who the answer to the why question, which Remini essentially abandons because he does not want to deal with it, and he specifically says, I'm not going to deal with this question. Bushman answers on the believer's side while acknowledging, oh yes, and it is possible to see Joseph Smith in this other way. Whereas Vogel explores to a far greater degree the inner Joseph Smith as he sees him. And I think the early Joseph Smith, I mean, there is no comparison in terms of the amount of attention that Vogel gives to understanding the thought processes of that early Joseph Smith. Bushman just does not approach that. But from my point of view, the weakness of Vogel's emphasis is that he doesn't even give a nod to the possibility of the believer perspective. that the only explanation, or the only answer for the why did Joseph Smith make his claim to be a treasure digger first, or why did he make his claim to be speaking with an angel? Why did he make his claim to be the mouthpiece of God in modern revelation? Relates to the family dynamics issue. It relates to Joseph Smith's desire to heal that dynamic rift in the family religiously. It relates to many different things, but it doesn't relate to God, because God is out of the equation. The metaphysical is out of the equation. I find that a serious weakness. But in terms of the amount of attention given to understanding the inner Joseph, Vogel gives far more attention to that than Bushman, because it's, as you point out, it's a given for him. For he states that he is a believer that Joseph Smith spoke with God, and so he does not feel the need to speak to that question in great detail, aside from just giving a nod in the direction that, yes, it's possible to see him as a fraud. But that's the most that Bushman is willing to do. So in one sense, I think the bias of belief or disbelief in these two authors both is an indication of both the strengths and the weaknesses.
That's kind of what I was going to address. You know, the paradigm or the worldview of the writer, the historian, shapes his work or her work. The worldview within which Bushman, Vogel, and Remini live shapes their approach. We have a believer in Bushman, a skeptic in Vogel, and someone who claims to be neither, an objective, neither believer, neither skeptic in Remini. And so we see the worldview or paradigm of the writer at work as a lens through which Joseph Smith is seen, approached, evaluated, and described. And as Mike said, that lens has both strengths and weaknesses inherent in the lens. There is more than one paradigm. There is more than one worldview. And if we are viewing someone through a particular lens, we may be limited to that one lens. Remini, at times, makes easy or quick assessments or assumptions that don't have much depth. I find him sometimes making, in his posing of questions, it's gentle, but it's sometimes a bit shallow as to why did Joseph do something or what was really going on with Joseph. He poses these questions from time to time, and they're a bit weak. Vogel, in his biography, claims to want to bring the two Josephs together, the fraud and the prophet, and to find an intersection between the two and explore that intersection. I wasn't convinced that he did. I saw Vogel as focused more on the fraud than the prophet, simply because Vogel's worldview or paradigm is that of a skeptic, someone who does not see visions, precognition, mysticism, revelation as real. Vogel sees these things as delusion. So Vogel doesn't allow for the reality of a spiritual or transcendent reality. Vogel views all transcendent experience that Joseph has, whether it's visions, whether it's gazing through stones, whether it's an act of creative imagination, whether it's myth-making, or whether it's entering Joseph's own mythic dimension, his own heroic, transcendent, mythic dimension of self, which I see Joseph doing on a daily basis. Not only is he creating myth, not only is he a myth maker, but he's entering his own mythic dimension regularly. Vogel tends to not see this as a valid or real, and I don't want to misrepresent Dan, so Dan, you can take issue with me in the question and answer, but as I understood Vogel, he sees an entrance into a non-ordinary reality or an altered state as delusional, and as residing in a person's own body chemistry, biochemistry, or their own subconscious self. And in this way, this was another curious thing about Vogel, he creates a kind of a dichotomy that I saw as a false dichotomy between notions of spiritual phenomena and a person's own subconscious, as if spiritual phenomena are out there and they're sort of granted to us and they burst into our reality like a glass of water. In my experience, as someone who does experience dreams and visions and precognition and have had these experiences all my life, they don't come from out there. They're not some other thing. They come from in here, from the subconscious, from the inner self. So I saw a kind of a dichotomy there that Dan was creating that I don't agree with, that I thought was kind of a problem. One thing I will say about Remini and Vogel is that they both allow the skeletons in the closet and the negatives and the critical accounts of Joseph to simply be what they are. They deal with these honestly and let them percolate. Both of these authors are able to just be with the negative information, whereas Bushman has a need as a believer and an orthopractic Mormon to resolve, to dissolve, to justify, to explain away the thornier, more difficult negative issues. So Bushman, on the one hand, is willing to engage all of the skeletons, or nearly all of the skeletons in Joseph's closet, from polygamy to magic and stone gazing and treasure hunting. But then he, in dealing with them, then he steps back too quickly and I think justifies them too easily at times. What are the weaknesses? I guess that pretty much covers what I saw as the weaknesses. It's dangerous to talk about weaknesses in works as ambitious and well-crafted and thorough as all three of these books. It's very easy for me to sit here and make a criticism of a book that it would be very difficult for me to produce.
Did you have anything to say about the weaknesses in Bushman's book? You talked about Vogel. Did you have anything to say about the weaknesses in Stone Rolling?
I did. I just mentioned that Bushman backs away. While engaging the skeletons in Joseph's closet, he backs away from them too quickly. And he also discards critical and anti-Mormon accounts of Joseph, I think, too quickly. He's not able to just kind of let them be what they are in the way that Remini and Vogel are able to.
I was hoping you'd also mention, since your field of orientation, I the way that it deals with women. I guess I should put my 2 cents worth in and then I'll leave it. But I found one of the most striking weaknesses was his treatment of polygamy and the way that he dealt with the changing role of women. I thought that was a real lacuna in the Bushman biography, and I must say, though, however, that it stimulated my thinking in new directions and kind of inspired the direction which I'm going to take my John Whitmer presidential address. But anyway, why don't we move on to the next question? I think the number two, I think, is what essential elements and attributes must a truly definitive and or balanced biography of Joseph Smith contain, and to what extent do the three biographies qualify? I'll let you go ahead and start again, Maxine.
Well, I should probably interject here, recap on the woman issue and interject that right here, because I think in order to, I don't know, create the ideal biography, the ideal history, I would, as a feminist theorist, would like to see women's experience and texts and voices seen for the central role that they truly have. And I did want to mention that about Bushman's biography. he, more than the other three by far, includes women's perspective and the role of women, Lucy and Emma and others, in Joseph's life as being more central or more involved than we have seen them to be in other works. In reality, women play a central role, not a marginal role. Their interaction in Joseph's life, his mother Lucy, his wife Emma, the other women in Joseph's life, these are central to the creation of the religion. So central, in fact, that we don't realize how central they are, and we tend to see women's roles as marginal, and they tend to be described that way. And definitely, Remini, in fact, goes so far as to say that women don't have much to do with the formation of the church. You know, my jaw dropped when I read that sentence. In his view, they don't have much to do because he's looking at male activities and male texts. But in reality, women are central. Women are central to religion. Women's history is religious history. Women make up the dominant percentage of people in the pews doing the work, having the experiences, carrying forth the church, making things work, making things happen. Whereas Bushman gets much more deeply into women's roles as being more integral in that process. Okay, to the point of the question, which is, what would it take to have an ideal history or a definitive biography? I would like to see the role of women in the creation of that biography and their role in that life as being understood and expressed for the centrality that it really has. I would also like to see, and I think all three of these biographies, but especially Bushman and Vogel, go a long way toward this, a multi-paradigmatic approach. When I think about the paradigms that are involved or the worldviews of Joseph Smith, Joseph Smith did not exist in one paradigm or one worldview. He existed, inhabited several, and moved easily between them, back and forth. He was a multi-paradigmatic and a multi-lensed person who would interact with individuals from their reality and their perspective. If he was talking to the credulous converts in Kirkland, he was in one mode. If he was talking to Porter Rockwell about going to get Boggs, he was in another mode. If he was talking to his scribe, or if he was talking to Emma, he was in another mode. If he was fighting with somebody, punching their lights out, he was in another mode. Joseph is tremendously complex and multi-paradigmatic. He lives in the magic worldview. He lives in Jacksonian America. He lives in the Old Testament. He lives in the New Testament. He lives in myth-making and creative imagination. He lives in his own heroic mythic status. He is moving between realities. And I think that in order to get a handle on Joseph, it takes approaching him from different paradigms and utilizing different paradigms at once, so that we're looking at him through the magic worldview and we're looking at him through a paradigm of myth and myth making and on and on. I would like to see more paradigms utilized. And yet that's a difficult proposition because, as I said at the outset, a writer or historian is approaching any topic through the paradigm in which they inhabit. So I think it almost takes an anthology of multiple scholars, multiple writers coming from different paradigms to start to get at who Joseph Smith was given his multi-paradigmatic nature.
I don't think the goal is false, but I think that the hope is false, that there will ever be a definitive biography of Joseph Smith. How can you write a definitive biography of someone to be unnamed who infuriates and mystifies as well as entrances his friends, his closest companion of life, his wife, who he married at just barely a legal age himself. He's larger than life. He's less than we want him to be. He's more than we need him to be. He's all of these contradictory things, and I don't think there will ever be a definitive biography, because he wasn't just making an arrogant statement when he said, "No man knows my history, and I would not blame you for not believing, and I wouldn't believe it if I didn't live it myself." He was a puzzle at some level to his closest associates. I mean, Brigham Young said there were things that he did not like and understand about Joseph, but he made the statement, which is often used polemically by the evangelicals in their anti-Mormon publications, but he said it wouldn't matter if he was a horse thief and a fraud and abetted his neighbor's wife and all of these things. He's a prophet of God, and his words are important for everyone on earth to know. That's a very difficult position to take, because it fights against the need that most of us have to make sense of things. And it's very difficult to adopt that point of view. It's far easier to say he had a personality disorder on top of a need to deceive. And then, you know, follow that through with his very troubled family background. And that can make a coherent, believable, from our secular point of view, and even us believers are secular. You compare us to Brigham Young and Joseph Smith's worldviews, and we don't share those. We have a very materialistic, mechanistic worldview. Every one of us has been raised with that. I don't think there will ever be a satisfactory biography, because nothing can adequately comprehend what even his closest associates could not comprehend, his difficulty as a person to explain. I mean, somebody who gives a sermon on not killing snakes because even poisonous snakes have a right to live, and then the next day goes out and kills a woodchuck, and, you know, and I mean, knocks. What sense does that make, aside from do what I say, not as I do, aside from, well, there are always exceptions? There's a weirdness about Joseph Smith that you can explain as a personality disorder, but there's also a charismatic quality to him that even those who disbelieved him found difficult to totally explain. And I just don't think there will ever be a definitive biography of that kind of person.
I would be reluctant to say that there would be a definitive biography, perhaps, of anyone. I think that a biography might stand as definitive for a time, but I don't think it can ever be the conclusive word on a life. New generations will always ask new questions about a historical figure, and those new questions will require new biographies to answer them. And so I think certainly if it's an impossible goal, none of the authors achieved it. But I think rather than weigh whether the biographies were definitive, it might be better to weigh whether they made essential contributions. I think in the case of Remini's short volume, well, like I said, I see it as an excellent introduction to the life of Joseph Smith. I'm not convinced that it makes essential contributions to the ongoing discussion about Joseph Smith. It's useful, but perhaps not essential. I would see Vogel and Bushman as making essential contributions. Anyone who really wanted to understand the continuing scholarly dialogue on Joseph Smith and hope to get maybe a full picture would need to read both of those volumes.
If you don't mind, I think I'd like to skip down to question number 5, which did any of the biographies modify or change your preconceived views of Joseph Smith. Are you comfortable with that question? Is that an okay question with the panelists? And I would suggest that we open it up for questions from the audience. Why don't we go in that direction? Okay.
Did any of the biographies modify or change? I learned a great deal from all three. It was interesting to see how all three dealt with some of the same material. But in terms of changing my view of Joseph, I would have to say no. I don't think any of them changed my own view. I wasn't convinced that Joseph was a pious fraud, although I greatly appreciated and was informed by Dan Vogel's book. But I don't come out in the same place that Dan did. I don't make the kind of simplistic justifications at times for Joseph's flaws and hypocrisies and prevarications that Bushman allows for. So, and Remini isn't trying to take a position or convince anyone of anything. So I came away from all three feeling edified and enlarged and informed, but not changed in my view. Essentially, I have to say that Joseph Smith's life, a prophet's life, is more than historical data. There is his spiritual life and his physical life, and I see Bushman trying to validate and get at the spiritual life as a valid part of the story. I see Vogel as looking at the spiritual life as being composed either of deception or delusion. The spiritual life is an untold part of the story. When Joseph Smith said, "No man knows my history," Fawn Brody thought it was a challenge to try to track down everything in his day planner, which is quite a challenge if you believe the psychological personality disorder theory that he's manic and narcissistic and I think borderline. You know, it's hard to track down the daily activities of someone that energetic and contradictory. Brigham Young refuted the folk notion of what Joseph Smith was alluding to. You know, that early folk Mormon notion that he was alluding to having been the Holy Ghost in the pre-existence. Brigham Young refuted that and said, no, when Joseph said, "No man knows my history," he was referring to his lineage as a literal descendant of Jesus Christ. Another interesting take on that. When Joseph said, "No man knows my history," I think he's referring, if you look at the whole paragraph from King Follett, he says, "You never knew my heart. No man knows my history. I cannot tell it. I can't convey my experiences." The key words are heart and experience. I think Joseph is referring to his inner life, emotional and spiritual, and I don't know that that can be captured. I don't know that we can know that.
Changing my view of Joseph Smith, none of the three books really changed my view of Joseph Smith, but I'd say in terms of deepening my appreciation of an aspect of Joseph Smith, Dan's emphasis on family dynamics, and I emphasize that because that for me was the most revealing portion of the book. I had always considered the possibility as a believer that everything I believed was false, and that Joseph Smith was a fraud, and the explication of that in Dan's biography of the pre-1831 period extended my consideration of that possibility. But I really had not considered the family dynamics of Joseph Smith to the degree that you are introduced to them in Dan's biography. And so for me, that is what I emphasize in Dan's biography, because I think he does that in a way that is not only the role of an analyst looking at an insect under the microscope, which many academics do, and you end up becoming that detached from whatever you're looking at, but there's an empathy that Dan brings to that very troubled family in many ways, that his Joseph Smith's family of origin, that is very important. Now, another biography, because it's out of the time range, is not included, but I think in many ways the most compassionate biography is not written, ever been published by Deseret Book Company of Joseph Smith. I think the most compassionate biography was published by the American Psychiatric Association, and that's the one by a man named Moraine, who looks at Joseph Smith as psychically wounded throughout life and explains why that is so. And he emphasizes the early life of Joseph Smith, and that is a book of I think, pure compassion all the way through. It comes out. But Dan's, although his book is not in that sense, he doesn't wear his heart on his sleeve the way I think Moraine does in his anguished presentation of what he sees as an anguished person. Dan, nonetheless, gives you an empathy that I don't think was ever present in any previous book for what this meant to Joseph Smith to grow up in this kind of family with these kinds of conflicts, and how that both damaged him as well as inspired him. And Jan, I think, would not disagree with this word of inspired, or this use of inspired, that this was a life-altering experience for Joseph Smith, and it affected him in ways that it affected no other one of his siblings. And I think Dan gives you an understanding of why that's the case, that you're not going to get elsewhere. And Bushman, as good as he is in talking about family dynamics, does not do it, I think, as well as Dan does.
I would have to say also that my view of Joseph Smith was not fundamentally changed by the biographies. I would have to say that Vogel's biography has definitely sharpened my focus in a couple of areas. One on the context of a revelation being significant to understanding it. And secondly, Vogel deals with something that it really wouldn't so much have occurred to me to look at, and that is power struggles. He looks, for instance, at an exchange between Samuel Lawrence and Joseph Smith as two fellow seers as a power struggle. Joseph Smith has reported that he saw the plates in the stone box in the hill, and he has Samuel Lawrence, according to one account, look in his seer stone and to see if he can see the plates there too. And Lawrence says he sees the plates, but he also sees a pair of spectacles, and he asks Joseph, didn't you see those? And Joseph looks again, supposedly, and oh yes, he sees them. You know, and so Vogel sees this as a way of Samuel Lawrence sort of one-upping Joseph Smith, even while he's affirming Smith's revelatory claims. Regardless of the accuracy of that account, it's a very interesting approach that, it really would not have occurred to me on my own to take. I actually, as a result of reading all three biographies, I think I have a greater appreciation for the different angles of vision that we can take on Joseph Smith and how those can flesh out what we see, the Joseph Smith that we have before our eyes. And I'm actually quite optimistic about what we can know about Joseph Smith, including the inner Joseph Smith, as we take these various angles.
Before I turn it over for questions, I just want to say in conclusion that I would sort of concur with particularly what Dan just said, that I think we can really profit from reading, no pun intended, from reading all three biographies if you haven't read all three of them, because they really do provide those differing perspectives of Joseph Smith, the Remini book, Joseph within the context of 19th century Jacksonian America, and kind of a thumbnail sketch of the trajectory of his life. Dan Vogel's, which I feel is an excellent contribution by virtue of the family dynamics which have been discussed. But I really find the centerpiece of his book, his careful textual analysis of the Book of Mormon. I feel like that's really the heart of Dan Vogel's book, and I think it's a significant contribution in and of itself. And as for the Richard Bushman book, here you get a kind of a state of current scholarship, an attempt to try to synthesize all of the myriad of varied interpretations and conflicting interpretations, because Bushman does give due to those interpretations, those naturalistic interpretations that he might not always agree with. He at least gives them voice, even though he doesn't agree with them. Usually comes down on the side of the believer. But I feel that all three of them. I would add a third. I would add a fourth book in there that kind of gives you kind of differing perspectives, and that would be the Prophet Puzzle, which was edited by Brian Waterman. I think that's also a very good, gives you some other perspectives, including those of Bill Moraine, Robert Anderson, and even me. But I want to turn to questions. Would you please come forward and talk into the microphone and direct it either to all or a particular person within the audience?
Two things I'd like whoever would like to comment on. I attended Richard Bushman's lecture that he gave in Idle Falls a couple months ago. In the heartland of rural Mormon fundamentalism, I was surprised at how many people are in attendance at that because I knew a lot of those people living in a small town, and I was surprised at the people that I saw in attendance there. The impact that Richard Bushman's book is having on believing Mormons is pushing them over the edge. This is a disturbing account for those believers who have not encountered much of what Bushman says, and if they want to go in depth more, they can go into the footnotes. But he's inviting them to proceed perhaps further into other discussions that Dan Vogel presents to us in his book and others. That is my first comment, and perhaps if you could comment on that. Second of all, it seems to me if we really want to understand Joseph Smith, we should perhaps seek his autobiography, and I see his autobiography written in canonized Mormon scripture. That is the Book of Mormon Doctrine and Covenants and Pearl of Great Price. I think Dan attempted to do that. It's highly speculative and is fraught with danger, but I think therein lies Joseph Smith's autobiography, if you'd like to comment on that as well.
Well, I'd like to actually comment on the first question or comment you made, and that is that I believe that unlike, I'll just say that Remini's book does not have the, even though I do think it's going to have long legs, merely because of the strengths that I mentioned in the publishing and the retail sales, Bushman's book is a watershed in Mormon history writing because he acknowledges so many areas of problems, so many areas of controversies, of sensitivities in Joseph Smith's life, and he acknowledges the disbelieving way of understanding these. And in some cases, he doesn't give his own assessment. He just allows the reader to give their assessments. I think that this is a watershed in terms of, as what you've described is actually what I anticipated would be the case, is that this book is a tremendous shock for Mormons who perceive Mormon writing enough to know Bushman's name as a prominent American historian and a believer. And turning to his book with just about that much knowledge and with virtually nothing known about Joseph Smith aside what they've been taught in their official outlets of the LDS Church, his book is not just simply an eye-opener. I think it's an earth-shaking book for the regular members of the church. And they are the principal audience, I think, at this point for the book, and the principal ones buying it. And it's certainly been read by every BYU professor of religion and probably all the seminary and institute teachers. And I think it has set the bar so high for Mormon writers that it will be very difficult, though not impossible, for them to write pablum stories about Joseph Smith from this point on, unless they're directed to primary children. And that is a very good, and I think a wonderful contribution of that book. I think also Dan Vogel's book, in terms of naturalistic views of Joseph Smith, will force the naturalistically inclined interpreters of Joseph Smith to take him seriously in a way that they may not have been willing to before. And although they may have, even upon hearing his claim, immediately decided he was a fraud or he was delusional, to read Dan Vogel's exploration of what that meant in Joseph Smith's life, as Dan Vogel perceived it, I think is also a watershed in naturalistic interpretations of Joseph Smith, that they will not remain the same, although never underestimate the evangelicals. But my guess is that careful scholars, not polemicists, will not be able to approach Joseph Smith in the simplistic way that they have in the past as naturalistic interpreters. So I see these two books as being watersheds in two different, and again, it's the polarization around Joseph Smith, but I mean two different directions.
I was just going to add, I think it's going to take a long time for church members to process Bushman's biography. And this was the most obvious quality and point to be made on this panel, and somehow we got into the details and I overlooked this. But Bushman's biography is a completely new chapter in biographies of Joseph Smith as consumed by church members. It is more than a watershed. It's an earth-shattering event. I think it's going to take a long time for members of the church to try to figure out what to do with this information, which is why Bushman is trying so hard to explain it. And I mean, he's tackling so much that church members have not known about. And then he's also, at the same time that he's tackling all of this and bringing it into the light, trying to somehow make sense of it for them, to some extent, not entirely. I mean, I think that comment from the audience is an important one, and I think that Bushman is to be congratulated and thanked for taking on such a difficult, difficult task. Is the Book of Mormon Joseph Smith's autobiography? You know, Robert Anderson and Dan Vogel are making a strong case that it, to some extent, is, and that is very compelling in both Anderson and Vogel. But is it his complete autobiography? No. As Vogel points out, Joseph Smith is utilizing some themes in his life in the Book of Mormon, but it's certainly not a parallel or close or actual account all the way through. So there are just a few themes.
As Maxine said, there is certainly a case to be made for autobiographical elements in the Book of Mormon, where the figure of Mormon, for instance, he sees Jesus at the age of 15, he's involved with slippery treasures, various things like that. But why would Joseph Smith tell his autobiography in the Book of Mormon? That, I think, would need to be explained to make a strong case that he did. It would just be strange. You know, I don't see why he would do it.
About 30 or 40 years ago, I'm Ralph Wagner. 30 or 40 years ago, there was a series of books published entitled Great Lives Observed that review the biographies of various influential people in history and analyze the problems involved, essentially what we're doing today. It is the type of book that I would like to write about Joseph Smith, but hesitate because I'm still too new to the field. But I suggest that there is, at this point in time, there is a market for such a book, and I hope that maybe Signature Books would hire somebody to undertake that that review.
All right. A lot has been said about the family dynamics in Dan Volkel's book, and I wish I could direct this question more to him. But Wittgenstein, maybe I will, but Wittgenstein was a big fan of Freud, and he looked at the interpretations of dreams. He said, well, this is really compelling. It's really neat. But the problem is you can plug any dream into this equation, and it works. And so he's saying basically, well, while it's interesting, the methodology is hollow because every dream works, whether it's a real dream or a fabricated dream, it all works. And as I was reading Dan Vogel's book, which I found very interesting, and there's a lot of arguments I found very compelling, at the same time, there's this overwhelming feeling that you could plug anything in and this family dynamics equation works. You could say, well, let's replace the Book of Mormon with Lord of the Rings or any other book, or replace Joseph Smith with myself. As I was reading, I say, okay, well, I can just as make the same argumentation relating my life to the Book of Mormon as an author as Joseph Smith would have. And so my question is, because of that, or do you see that analogy where this relationship between Joseph Smith through the family dynamics to the Book of Mormon could be made with any other book? And if so, what value is that methodology?
I find the idea of psychobiography fascinating and hopeful. You know, but I'm not convinced that the theories that are used are well documented enough, particularly, of course, like Freud, psychoanalysis. Family systems, I'm not really that closely familiar with, but as I said, I wish that one thing I would have preferred to see more of in Dan's family systems analysis would be more appeal to the theory, to the literature. Can we look at studies that show, to some extent, maybe how real families work, and then compare that to what we see in Joseph Smith's family, what we see in the Book of Mormon? So I think, yeah, the one problem is we need criteria, definite criteria, by which to measure a reading of the text, and I think we need to work harder on identifying those criteria and being systematic in psychological interpretations of Joseph Smith and of any text that he's associated with.
Well, surely every text that a writer writes reveals something about the writer. And whether you take Arthur Henry King's approach to literary criticism, that it's highly indicative of the psychology of the writer, or whether you take Robert Anderson, who said in Inside the Mind of Joseph Smith that pay attention to the first book. The first book that a writer produces is the one that tells the most about their psychology. The Book of Mormon then being quite revealing about Joseph's psychology. I think the point is that the Book of Mormon is a text. Sure, any book, any text is going to reveal a great deal about its writer. The point is the Book of Mormon is a text, and it is telling us something. It's not that it's the only book that ever revealed anything about its author or translator, but the fact that it does reveal something about Joseph Smith is the compelling point that Dan Vogel and Robert Anderson make.